Welcome to HN Pod, your daily conversation about the most interesting stories, discussions, and debates from the front page of Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Monday, August 24th, 2026, which means we are covering the top stories from yesterday, August 23rd. This is episode 497, and we have a really great mix of topics today.
We absolutely do. We are going to start with some thoughts on the craft of writing in the age of AI, then move into a genuinely mind-blowing example of what local AI models can do right now. After that, we will look at the upcoming Wi-Fi 8 standard, dive into a fascinating Rust-based PC emulator, and finally, take a painful trip down memory lane for anyone who built computers in the early 2000s.
Let us jump right into it. Our first story comes from an author named T.R. Napper, and the title is To Become a Better Writer, Read As Much As You Can. It pulled in over 300 points. Napper is a published author who teaches creative writing, and he wrote this slightly frustrated but very passionate essay about a trend he is seeing where aspiring writers admit they just do not read books.
Right. He asks his students what they are currently reading, and they tell him they are too busy. And his internal reaction, which he politely keeps to himself, is basically to check their screen time. If you are spending 3 to 5 hours on your phone a day, you have time to read. But he makes a really compelling case for why reading is the only non-negotiable rule of writing. It teaches you craft instinctively. He mentions how he naturally used a three-act structure in his early writing without ever studying it, just because his brain had absorbed the pattern from years of reading.
Exactly. And he brings up this old sitcom joke from Everybody Loves Raymond where Werwin suggests he should write a novel, and when asked about it says, "Write it, I wouldn't want to read it." Napper uses that to pivot to generative AI. He argues that AI gives all the people who do not actually like reading or literature the capacity to generate a book. They like the idea of making art, but they do not actually like art.
The Hacker News comments really ran with this angle. A user named Vintage Dave talked about how reading was integral to writing his own novel about post-apocalyptic startups. He said you learn what annoys you, like dropping into italics for thoughts, by reading other people's work. But another user replied with a reference to a recent piece in The Atlantic about how we are entering a post-literate age. We are reading more words than ever on screens and feeds, but we're losing the muscle for long-form, deep-focus reading.
That's the scary part. If we rely on AI to write for us, we may lose the capacity to develop our own views. But there was some optimism in the thread, too. A commenter who does AI research for a living pointed out that the book reading bubble is actually one of the most anti-AI communities out there. They see writing as a purely creative endeavor and genuinely enjoy the struggle of a blank page. It's a good reminder that just because we can automate the output does not mean we want to automate the process.
Speaking of automating the process, let us move to our second story, which honestly left me a bit speechless. The title is, I gave Quen 3.827B a reverse engineering job, and it finished in 30 minutes. This was written by Adam Conway over at XDA Developers, and it got about 160 points.
This is wild. So Quen 3.827B is an open weights model, and Adam is running it locally on a Lenovo workstation with NVIDIA's Grace Blackwell chip. He decided to give it the hardest real-world task he could think of that would fit on one machine, which was reverse engineering the license check of a commercial op he had purchased.
And the way it played out is fascinating. Adam tried to use a standard jailbreak prompt, pretending to be the developer of the app testing his own security. The model immediately called his bluff. It checked the signing certificate, told him he was not the developer, named the actual developer, and refused to build a bypass.
But here is the kicker. It said it would not build a bypass, but it offered to audit the verification and document the weaknesses. So it goes ahead and does entirely static analysis. It never actually executes the app. It disassembles the framework, reads through thousands of lines of ARM64 assembly, maps the security functions, and figures out that the vendor hid the public verification key inside the binary.
Then it pieces the key back together and hands it over. And because Adam had a legitimate license, he could verify that the model had perfectly reconstructed the key. A model running in just 17 gigabytes of VRAM completely deconstructed a commercial software security chain in 30 minutes, something that would take a human using a tool like Ghidra days of painstaking work.
And it gets better. The model actually made a mistake on its first try. It produced a key that passed the signature check but failed an integrity hash check. Instead of just stopping and hallucinating a success like older models would, it noticed the mismatch, went back to the drawing board entirely on its own, and kept working until the bytes matched perfectly.
Once the model had documented exactly how the offline verification worked and where the weak points were, Adam basically pointed out that the steps for a bypass were now sitting right there in the chat. The model changed its tune and wrote a small script to execute the proof of concept. Adam ran it, and it worked.
The takeaway here is huge for cybersecurity. A local 27 billion parameter model is now a legitimate input to threat models. If you are relying on security through obscurity or hiding keys in local code, a local AI can and will unravel it in half an hour. It is a completely new world for software protection.
It really is. Let us shift gears to some hardware news. Our third story is Wi-Fi 8 is the first wireless upgrade in years that isn't chasing speed. This one got over 150 points.
I am so happy about this. For the last decade, every new Wi-Fi standard has been about massive theoretical speed increases. Wi-Fi 7 can theoretically hit 23 gigabits per band. But let us be real, almost nobody has internet connections that fast. And even if you do, your phone does not need it to load a web page.
Exactly. So the IEEE is taking a different approach for Wi-Fi 8, which they are calling ultra-high reliability. The maximum theoretical speeds, the bands, and the modulation are staying exactly the same as Wi-Fi 7. Instead, they are focusing entirely on making the connection bulletproof, especially when you have dozens or hundreds of devices connected.
They are targeting a 25% increase in effective throughput in noisy environments and a 25% reduction in latency. They are introducing things like distributed tone resource units, which let devices spread their transmissions across a wider bandwidth to get higher transmit power legally. This is huge for smart home devices with tiny, weak antennas.
The Hacker News comments were totally on board with this shift. A user named AvUpsuption talked about managing a warehouse network. They said they don't need hundreds of gigabits of theoretical speed 5 centimeters from the router. They just need a reliable, rock-solid 20 megabits per second for their barcode scanners, and they need devices to roam between access points without getting stuck in reconnect loops.
Yes, the roaming improvements in Wi-Fi 8 are going to be a lifesaver for enterprise setups and mesh networks at home. Another commenter brought up a great point about how our devices themselves create bottlenecks. They mentioned how dual SIM 5G phones often share a single radio, so if you're on a call on one SIM, your data drops on the other. It shows how much of our network unreliability is actually hardware resource contention.
The catch is that Wi-Fi 8 will not be finalized until 2028, but the consensus on Hacker News seems to be that if your current setup is working fine, you might want to just skip Wi-Fi 7 entirely and wait for Wi-Fi 8 to get those reliability features.
Good advice. Moving on to our fourth story, we have a really cool open source project. It is called Marty PC, and it is a cross-platform emulator for early PCs written in Rust. It got about 150 points.
Emulators are always popular on Hacker News, but Marty PC is special because of its extreme dedication to accuracy. The author, who goes by Glorious Cow on the forum, actually built physical hardware harnesses for real early CPUs. He did this so he could build test suites against the actual silicon and ensure his emulation is 100% cycle accurate, down to every tiny quirk of the original hardware.
That level of dedication is just awesome. And because the author was in the thread answering questions, we got some amazing computing history trivia. Someone asked him what his favorite what-the-heck-were-they-smoking moment was while developing the emulator.
Oh, this was the best part of the thread. He said it was the IBM PC Junior keyboard interface. IBM wanted a wireless keyboard back in the early 80s, so they used infrared transmitters. But a normal wired keyboard uses a two-wire protocol for clock and data. With infrared, you have no clock wire.
Right. So how do you synchronize the signals? The PC Junior had an IR receiver, but no hardware buffer. So the system had to receive every keystroke perfectly in real time. When you pressed a key, the IR receiver got the start bit, which triggered a non-maskable interrupt on the CPU. The system then used the 8253 timer chip to time the infrared bursts, and the CPU read out every single bit of the scan code entirely in software.
It is just incredibly hacky. And Glorious Cow pointed out that the PC Junior also famously lacked direct memory access. So if your floppy drive was transferring data, it disabled interrupts. The system had a timer that would literally just reset the floppy controller if things took too long, meaning if you tried to type on the keyboard while the floppy drive was spinning, everything would just fall apart.
It is a miracle any of that stuff worked at all. There was also a nice side discussion about using Rust for the emulator. The author said he just wanted to learn Rust and thought this was a good project for it.
Other commenters agreed that Rust is fantastic for emulators because you don't have to fight threading and memory management the way you do in C or C++, so you can just focus on getting the pixels and timings right.
That brings us to our final story of the day, which is a bit of hardware gore. It's a post from the OS2 Museum blog titled "The End of an Athlon." It pulled in about 140 points.
If you built PCs around the year 2000, this story will make you wince. The author was swapping out some old CPUs, and when he pulled the heatsink off an AMD Athlon XP, a massive chunk of the silicon die just ripped right off and stayed glued to the heatsink.
There are pictures in the article, and it is brutal. A quarter of the shiny silicon core is just gone. The article notes that back then, both AMD and Intel used flip chip PGA packaging to help with cooling because processors were suddenly hitting 50 to 80 watts of heat and they were struggling to cool them.
The problem was this left the raw silicon die completely exposed. If you did not put the heatsink on perfectly flat, or if the mounting clip applied uneven pressure, you would crack the die. Intel gave up on this pretty quickly and started putting metal heat spreaders over their chips, which is what we are all used to today. But AMD kept the exposed silicon around for the Athlon XP line.
It was such a stressful era for PC builders. Commenters were sharing their war stories. One user mentioned how common it was to see Athlons with chipped corners that somehow still worked. Another user shared the golden rule of removing those old heatsinks. You have to run the PC for a few minutes to warm up the thermal paste, and then gently twist the heatsink to break the bond. If you just pull straight up, the thermal paste acts like a vacuum seal, and you end up ripping the CPU right out of the socket, or in this case, ripping the CPU in half.
I definitely bent a few pins back in the day for getting that trick. The author suspects this particular Athlon had a microcrock in it for years from thermal stress, and pulling the heatsink was just the final straw. It is a great little piece of retro hardware archaeology.
It really is. And that wraps up our stories for today. From the philosophy of reading to AI hackers, the future of Wi-Fi, cycle-accurate emulators, and shattered silicon.
A classic hacker news mix. Thanks so much for joining us for episode 497. We will be back tomorrow to break down whatever hits the front page next.
Until then, maybe put down the phone and go read a book. Have a great day, everyone.